There's something special about 6 o'clock in the morning when it's still too early to knock, and the dusty light shines down on the block and reflects up and down on the hands of the clock. 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Hasn't it? The show's pre-recorded only because I've kind of got a little bit of a bug and I need some rest. But I'm so happy to be back. I've been in Standing Rock probably for a month altogether, but at two different times. Maybe it's even a little over a month. And it's been amazing being there. So I just want to start the show off letting you know that on Tuesday, November 15th, there's an action throughout the country for Standing Rock. And the Action Corps NYC has something planned. And in New York, people are going to gather at 4 p.m. at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers New York District Office at 26 Federal Plaza. And they'll be there for a duration and gathering, showing support. And it's peaceful. And Action Corps is also asking people to write letters calling for action. And that will be at Whole Foods at 270 Greenwich Street later in the afternoon. If you have a problem in finding them or if you need information, call Isaac at 347-756-1896. And this information is also on the Morning Eclectic page on WBAI's homepage where you see coming attractions. This is a really fun show. I have Camille Seaman on the show. She and I met at Standing Rock, and she is an amazing photographer, and she's going to talk about her shooting in the Arctic region. She's also been a storm chaser, and we met because we were talking about this great project that she was doing at Standing Rock and away from Standing Rock, and it's called We're Still Here. Camille is Native American and Afro-American, and she's doing this project, and we just had great conversations at Standing Rock. Anyone who has tears coming to their eyes when they talk about Mother Earth and their love for Mother Earth, well, they've got me. And it was so beautiful talking to her, and I'm so glad she came on as a guest. And then I have Martin Camille Valentine, and he's the executive artistic director of the Family Repertory Company, and I'm part of that group. And we're doing a show tonight, and that's another reason why this is pre-recorded, so I can kind of heal my throat a bit. And it's going to be in Staten Island, and that information as well is on the WBAI Morning Eclectic page for coming attractions. But I hope you really enjoy this show. I will be back with you live next week. My guest is Camille Seaman. Camille was born in 1969 to a Native American, Shinnecock Tribe father, and African American mother. She graduated in 1992 from the State University of New York at Purchase, where she studied photography with Jan Groover and has since taken master workshops with Steve McCurry, Sebastião Salgado, and Paul Fusco. Her photographs have been published in National Geographic magazine, Italian Geo, German Geo, Time, The New York Times Sunday Magazine, Newsweek, Outside, and many other publications. She frequently leads photographic and self-publishing workshops, and her photographs have received many awards, including a National Geographic Award and the Critical Mass Top Monograph Award. In 2008, she was honored with a one-person exhibition, The Last Iceberg, at the National Academy of Sciences, Washington, D.C. Camille lives in California and takes photographs all over the world using digital and film cameras in multiple formats. She works in a documentary fine art tradition and since 2003 has concentrated on the fragile environment of the polar regions. And we're so glad to have Camille today because I know you're going back to the Arctic later this month or in December. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here on WBAI.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So Camille and I met at Standing Rock. She was really wonderful when I started asking her questions about the work she was doing there. Yeah, let's maybe begin at Standing Rock, yeah?
Yeah, because it's all connected, you know. What's happening at Standing Rock directly ties into my work in the polar regions as well as my storm chasing work. It's really all connected. It's about what we're doing to the planet and what we need to stand up for, and really starts to evoke questions of what do we want the future to be like for our children's children.
Absolutely, and it is interesting how everything has come together at Standing Rock. It's more than just DAPL. It is all of Mother Earth, and it's all of the first peoples of Mother Earth, too, converging and coming together and crying up and saying, enough, no more.
Yeah, you know, I like to call what I witnessed and was part of at Standing Rock the Great Remembering. It really is a place that has attracted so many of us who felt really pulled, called like a magnetic pull to that place, to be part of this, to stand up, because in so many ways, in our own local communities, in our own experiences, we have seen our rights and our environment and our voices trampled. Mm-hmm. And so the gathering that is happening there, of course, is historic. Now it's close to 300 of the over 560 federally recognized tribes have come to be there, to stand there in solidarity. Beyond that, people have come from all over the globe to basically say, enough. We have to stop this madness of short-term gain at the cost of our future generations.
Yeah. And because of your work, especially with the glaciers, and all the work in the polar regions, you've maybe seen it even more than most, the devastation that is going on now.
Yes, you know, I was really disappointed that climate was not more of a talking point in our presidential elections or even local. No one should be elected to office at this time that doesn't understand how real climate is. I mean, I have worked for over 10 years documenting in both the Arctic and Antarctic the melting that I'm witnessing with my own eyes, and working side by side with scientists who are basically telling me just how bad it's going to be if we don't stop what we're doing right now and find another more sustainable way. And I don't say that to scare people. I say that to engage them, to activate them, to figure out what in their own personal lives they value and want to stand up for. The results of our election have shown that people are afraid. They're afraid of the future. They're afraid of change. They're afraid of being left out. And, you know, you cannot make rational, good decisions from a place of fear.
No.
Wow. No, you cannot. And so when you have large parts of the American people, you know, the 98-99% really struggling day to day to get those bills paid and not feel the stress and pressure of what that is like just to keep things going, it's very difficult to make good choices. It really is. It's really hard to see a larger picture. It's really hard to understand how things are all connected. That oil that will flow from the Bakken oil fields through that pipeline will potentially poison and jeopardize over 18 million people. And, you know, there are pipeline projects in the works all over this country. There are spills happening and explosions. We see that in the headlines and we just don't know what to do. Well, one of the things to do is to not build it in the first place. Embrace sustainable,
you know,
in your own life. And on a larger scale.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that with Standing Rock, sustainability is coming up so much. You were there, what was it, about 2 weeks ago now, with Mark Ruffalo, and you guys brought solar panels? Or two solar trucks. Yeah, you tell
me. So I was asked to basically shadow Mark Ruffalo, and as a group called Solar Solutions, and I recommend everyone look that up. Just Google that because they do have an amazing plan for all 50 states to go renewable now. It's possible. We don't need this oil. But anyway, I was there to follow Mark Ruffalo and Wahala Johns. And Wahala Johns is the head of a nonprofit called Native Renewables. And I think that's just an indication that, you know, Native people get it. They understand that if their tribes are going to survive what's coming, they need to get off of this fossil fuel train.
And, I mean, we collectively don't realize, I mean, I think some of us are still in that mindset where this is creating jobs. Well, it's creating jobs, and it's destroying your life, your future, and the lives of your children and grandchildren, whereas renewable energy, I mean, is sustainable, and it's helping your life, and all the jobs that can be had there is really, sometimes it's just not mentioned, or and I guess it's big oil that also keeps it down and keeps that information out and try to keep things that are in this seeming status quo that isn't, because it's
absolutely
wreaking havoc.
Yeah, it's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, it is not in the interest of these, you know, multi-billion dollar oil corporations to preach this new word. To show, I mean, they have literally trillions of dollars invested in their infrastructure.
Yeah.
And they want to keep that going. You know, the way forward is not to continue to poison ourselves, not to continue to create, again, short-term jobs.
Short-term.
You'll have that job for as long as that pipeline or oil boom happens, but what's happened in North Dakota, you've seen this rise and fall, this boom and bust of this oil culture, where if you had wind and solar, there would be no boom or bust. It would just be steady work and building and maintenance and, you know, all much healthier for us and more equitable.
Yeah, and that's...
And by equitable, I mean... You know, it's excuse me, I have a little cough.
Me too.
Yeah. It's more equitable socially. Each person can have and reap the rewards of this instead of just a few with interest in an oil company.
Yeah, and that's, I think, where you guys, the Native people, come in, because you've had that sense, that knowing all along, and the rest of us really have to lift up our ears and hear this and know this and live this for all of us to survive, really.
Well, you know, as I said to you, I think, in a previous conversation, this goes back to a fundamental difference in the way that we perceive the world. Western European-based society sees themselves as separate from nature, that this earth was given to them by God to do with as they wanted. Mm. And the reality is, what you do to this planet, what you're doing to yourself. We as Native people understand that everything is interconnected, interrelated. That tree, that water, that air is all part of you. And if you cut it down, if you pollute it, if you poison it, you're doing that to yourself. So I think if we are all to survive, that basic perspective needs to shift. That way of seeing the world and understanding that there is no such thing as being separate.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as resource. There's only family. There's only relation. You cut a forest down, you have basically wiped out your family. If you dam a river, you're basically starving yourself. So, you know, these are all things that need to be recalibrated if we are going to survive, basically what we've set in motion ourselves. And, you know, it frustrates me that we like to think of ourselves as intelligent when we make such bizarre emotional choices. And again, you know, when you operate from a place of fear or anxiety, you cannot make good decisions.
That is so true. And it's so well put. It really is.
So, a huge part of what I was doing at Standing Rock, mm-hmm. at the Ocheti Sakuin camp, was to show the individuals. I wanted to show the basic people that walked away from whatever they were doing because they knew they had to take this moment, make this moment that moment, in which they said, I can no longer let this keep going on, and I choose this moment to stand up with my brothers and sisters and say, enough. You can no longer do this to our planet in silence, in our silence, in our apathy. And so the photos that I made there, I was thinking of them as a historic moment, knowing that generations from now, people will point to that moment and say something happened there, something began, something started, and these are some of the images from that. These are some of the people and the individuals that stood with courage and bravery against all odds, against incredible force and aggression, just to stand up, not for money, not greed, just the rights to clean water.
Yeah. Standing up for Mother Earth. And were they all portraits?
That you took? A lot of them are portraits, but many of them are also landscape. I thought it was very important to sort of catch a rhythm of the land. You felt it, I'm sure, being out there, rising with the sun and watching it travel across the sky and seeing the leaves change colors and then fall and the wind blow and the geese fly overhead and the eagles circle. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really important to try and describe that through images as well.
Oh, that's good. And I think you told me, too, were you getting some audio from some of the people, or video?
Both. Both. I try to capture even on audio that driver who would come through the camp before dawn saying, wake up, my relative. You know, I wish I had that for my alarm every day, you know, because it was so beautiful. Him saying, it's a beautiful day, my relatives. Remember why you're here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter where you live. It's important to wake up that way and know that you are part of something bigger than you.
Yeah, and you really, really, really felt it, feel it when you're there, how you are. I mean, I did one interview, a short video one with Guy Dullknife, and every morning, he must be 70s, 80s, but every morning, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, he was there starting prayer and everything, and you know, as the time changed and it got later, you know, maybe it was closer to 6:30, but it's so beautiful, and the consistency and the prayer and being in prayer and just being there the whole time is exquisite. It really is exquisite.
Well, again, I mean, that's part of that acknowledgement that you are part of it all.
Yeah.
That you are not, it's not about you as ego or mm-hmm. this separate sense of self. It's you as part of the sunrise, you as part of the landscape, and honoring that and recognizing it and in all humility, standing before it and surrendering.
Yeah. And gratitude with it. Just so grateful for
absolutely
it, for being there. Yeah, the land has such a pull there, such a pull. When will these pictures come out, these photographs?
So TED, as in TED Talks, just published yesterday, but they're a little overshadowed by everyone's grief about the election. So, but they exist on the TED Ideas blog, and I can send you that link.
Oh, cool.
They also, New York Times, as part of their race-related Instagram, is also posting images every day from that series. And also Mark Ruffalo is using his images. I think The Guardian posted one of my images with his words for an article about Standing Rock.
Oh.
So they're getting out there. I only have a short period of time before I head to Antarctica, just a couple of weeks. So
wow.
I'm working as hard as I can to try and even produce a short video,
mm-hmm.
Which I will post both on my Vimeo page and social media.
Oh, good, good. I'll look for you on Vimeo as well as social media. Your website is Camille Seaman, CamilleSeaman, and everyone should go to look at it. It's just so visually beautiful. It really is.
Thank you. So, you know, a huge... I believe in beauty, and
mm-hmm.
a huge part of my work and my message is to show that there is something beautiful about this life and about this existence, about this planet,
mm-hmm.
that there's something awesome about the fact that we get to have this experience. And what I hope the images on my website and even beyond communicate is that it's important to sort of step back from our macro view of our lives and remember there's a bigger picture, that there's scale involved, and we are not the center of the universe.
Mm. Yeah,
so all of my work, whether it's at Standing Rock, Chasing Storms, or in the polar regions, I hope it is a emotional and beautiful. I want it to trigger conversations for the viewer and the work. I don't ever want to tell anyone what they should feel or see. I just want to put it there and let them engage with it.
They do speak to you. They truly do, because as I was looking, I was different feelings, seeing different things in each. They do speak to you. When you go back to the Arctic region now, will you be going to someplace you've been before and comparing photographs of before and after, you know, over a period of time? Or will you be shooting some new areas?
I will be in some new areas. For example, usually I venture to Antarctica through Argentina, and this time I'm going through Chile. And so I will visit the glaciers in Chile before we head to Antarctica. And in Antarctica, I definitely will be revisiting many of the places that I have over the past almost two decades, and see what is the same, what is different, and what's new. And yes, hopefully there will be that comparison, but I have to say, everyone keeps asking me if I'm excited, and I have to say I'm a little nervous about what I will discover. I'm really, really, I have no idea how much will be recognizable to me, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious about the storm chasing, because how brave do you have to be and how close do you get to a storm in order to capture it? Because, again, there's some amazing photographs of the storms.
So I started chasing storms in 2008, partly because I was curious about, well, you know, if our poles are melting, how is that going to affect our temperate zones and its weather? And I was named after Hurricane Camille, so I thought, why not go chase some storms? And so I don't think it's a matter of courage, but more just, you know, how do you say, it's risk that I have, you know, put a number on and said, okay, this, I'm willing to take this amount of risk, calculated risk. And so, because I'm trying to photograph the structure of the storm, ideally, I don't want to get too close. There have been some situations where, you know, you end up getting chased by the storm, and that's not where you want to be. You want to stay in the chasing position, not the being chased position. And so also, these storms are so big. Some of them are 50 miles wide. Wow. If you're going to fit that in your lens, you cannot get necessarily that close. And, you know, excuse me, when there are tornadoes on the ground, of course, you don't want to get hit by it, but you are drawn to seeing it.
How close do you get, like, to a tornado?
I think the closest I've been myself is probably within a mile. And that's close enough. You know, like, I'm not one of these people in an armored vehicle trying to have the tornado hit me so I get, you know, inside footage. I'm more interested in showing again how powerful and awesome the forces are on this planet. And I know a lot of people always ask me, like, did it really look like that? Yes, those are the colors. Those are not altered colors.
Oh, they're amazing colors. And, you know, that is such an important fact and aspect you brought up as far as knowing the forces of nature, because sometimes we as two-legged seem to think with our technology and all our intelligence that we're above nature, you know, and we're so not. Mother Nature rules. Mother Earth rules, you know?
Yeah, there's this beautiful quote. Of course, I'll butcher it, but it basically says that nature always has the last word.
Yeah.
And I think I always keep that in mind, no matter where I am. You might think you can build a structure or be in a vehicle or somehow, you know, shelter yourself with a wall or something against the power of nature. But in the end, she has the last word, always. And so, again, with humility and reverence, I approach these things and with great respect. I know that I know when it's close enough. And we had a pretty close call in 2013. And after that, it wasn't quite the same. We chased one more year in 2014. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't feel the same. And I lost my curiosity, my excitement just seemed to not be there. And so I began this new project of We Are Still Here.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Which is going around all the different tribes in the United States and sort of updating our visual record.
Oh, that's beautiful, though. So We Are Still Here, then, is going beyond Standing Rock, correct?
Well, that's just part of it. I had already begun it. And when I found out what was going on up there and knew I had to go and continue that work there, partly because I wanted to see just how many different tribes were called to be there, mm-hmm. but also to record the different faces from all the different places that mm-hmm. came. And really, again, with history in mind, the images that I was making before anyone was photographed, I would ask them, I would say, if this is the photograph that survives of you 100, 200 years into the future, how do you want to communicate who you are and what your life experience has been through this image? And, you know, it's a very beautiful thing to stop and think about the generations that are part of you moving forward that you will never meet. Yeah, so I just approach those portraits as messages to the future. And then I would record also audio and video for those who wanted to send a message to their descendants 100 years from now. What would they want them to know, particularly about why they came to stand at Standing Rock?
It's gorgeous. Is there a special website for these as well, or no?
Well, you know, I thought I was going to sit on them, but I think it's too important. I think the world needs to know what these people, not only what they said, but why they came, what's at stake. And I posted one from Sarah Jumping Eagle on my Instagram. You can find that video there. It's very short. But basically love. Love was why everybody came. Love for those they will never meet.
Yeah, I agree with you. So many people I've spoken to said even that they've waited their whole lifetime for this, and everything they've learned up until now is brought them here. And I felt the same way, that everything in my life, everything accumulated knowledge and experiences brought me to this point to be there at Standing Rock with everyone and to stand with everyone, and felt so privileged to be able to be there.
Yeah, to bear witness mm-hmm. and to support in whatever way I could. In my case, it was documenting mm-hmm. and sharing that with the world in whatever way that I can. Absolutely right. Everything in my life prepared me for what came there.
Yeah.
And more than that, it was a reaffirmation that we need to keep pushing against this idea that we need more things to make us happy.
Yes.
We need to keep pushing against this idea that we are powerless or not one of us alone can make a difference. We can make a difference when we stand together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also there, you see, it was love. It is and continues to be a very peaceful action and, you know, coming up against people who are hitting you with batons and spraying mace and doing terrible things to you is overwhelming. And you want to talk about trauma to experience that. But that's courage. That's love. That's bravery. You know, chasing storms is nothing compared to standing at Standing Rock.
Well, the feeling of it, but chasing the storms is pretty big, girl, pretty big. And I also have to say how good you were, because you and I met for the first time and we chatted and I was so enthralled with everything you were saying. And then we had those 55 mile an hour winds and your whole setup kind of went, whatever, gone with the wind. And you were so steadfast and you just set up another tent and, you know, you stayed focused and you kept going, even though everything kind of got blown about.
Yes. I believe that there are no failures, just lessons. And if you stop long enough to sit and be still and sort of regroup and listen, the lessons reveal themselves. And when the wind took my tent, I was devastated, but I also felt like, okay, this is not going to be as easy as I may want it to be, and I just need to dig a little deeper. And, you know, there's the support of my friends and family. They told me, they're like, get back out there, do what you need to do. You've been in tougher situations, and you got this. And it's the same thing post-election. Mm-hmm. I say this to everybody. We can do this. We have survived and weathered greater storms.
Absolutely.
And let's take this opportunity to build the country we want instead of the one that we think we've been handed.
Mm-hmm. Very true words, and you're an inspiration. Your work is inspirational, and so are your words and your soul and your spirit. I thank you so very much. And your website again is Camille Seaman, SEAMAN.com. And if you want to give out any other ways for us to see your work.
Yes, all my social media is my name, mm-hmm. Whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you can find me at Camille Seaman.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
I thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, I won't be able to before I go to Antarctica,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which saddens me. I cannot tell you, like, it's like I'm twitchy.
Oh, trust me, I get it.
but if they are still there when I come back, mm-hmm. in February, mm-hmm. from Antarctica, mm-hmm. I will definitely go back. I don't care if it's midwinter. I actually want to see that.
Wow. Well, maybe, yeah, Antarctica, North Dakota, I don't know. All the best to you, Camille Seaman. Thank you. My guest is Marvin Camille Valentine, Executive Artistic Director of the Family Repertory Company here in New York. And tonight he is directing the Retro Art Show, Saturday, November 12th, for the Labyrinth Collective in Staten Island. Welcome, Marvin.
Well, thank you for having me, Helena.
You're
so welcome.
Pleasure
to be speaking with you.
Now, I'm curious. You were telling me a little bit about this show. So it's a combination of art and music, yeah?
That is correct. It is actually part of the Labyrinth Arts Collective. Mm-hmm. The show is the Retro Art Show, which will be at the Annex of the Reformed Church at 54 Port Richmond Avenue in Staten Island. And basically, it's a homage to the retro pop art scene, which started in the late 60s and ran through the 70s straight into the early 80s. We're going to have various things that are involved in the art scene. Now the Family Repertory Company, which is my company, we will be doing a music montage, with a narrative talking about the various artists that were popular at a particular time. And, we have a list of songs that it started in the mid 60s straight on into the early 80s. We actually will be starting with For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield. I think it's a very fitting song for that time period and actually relevant today, too.
Yeah, how relevant it is today is just amazing.
Yeah, and well, we're going to put you out there, Helena.
Okay.
You will be singing that song with us.
I will.
Helena is a part of the Family Repertory Company. She will be one of our performers. We will just continue on using songs like Life on Mars by David Bowie and then Wasted Years by Led Zeppelin. We're even going to include Native New Yorker by Odyssey because if anybody knows the retro art scene, it kind of culminated into the disco scene. As we continue, we will close it out with Blondie's Rapture. And I actually want to particularly use that because it's my way of showing how the pop art, you know, grew, and it actually grew into other cultures, which was the hip-hop culture. Hmm. And we will be speaking about the artist of that time, who initially was a graffiti artist and then became probably one of the biggest pop artists since Andy Warhol, and that would be Keith Haring.
Yeah.
So it's going to be great. We also going to be having other activities there. A woman by the name of Viv, she is going to be presenting her photography, but she's got like all kinds of retro clothes, like beads and wigs and stuff like that, that you could wear and take pictures of that. And also Elaine Mendez, who is the director of the Labyrinth Arts Collective, will be having displays of art all around for different types of artists and retro artists. Now this is for Saturday. Sunday, they'll have a featured artist by the name of Danielle D'Onofrio, and she will be presenting her work. And that's like an early afternoon activity. So,
what type of work does she do?
I believe her art is a homage to the retro art scene of that time in that era.
Mm-hmm.
So she basically goes back. She takes it back in her artwork. For Saturday, the show, the showcase starts at 6. The doors open at 6. It's from 6 to 9. And my show, the Family Repertory Company show, will be at 7. It will start at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk, will there be artwork on display as well?
Absolutely. Yes, there will be artwork on display. The artists will be there to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there will be art pictures of the art from these artists from back in that era as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just going to be an eye-opening experience for people that have never experienced the retro art scene, or for those who have, or for those who even just read about it. I actually encourage young artists and future artists to come on down and check it out. I really think it would be an enlivening experience for everyone.
And
if you're interested in getting advanced tickets, you can go on labyrinthartscollective.org.
Okay. So the website for tickets is labyrinthartscollective.org. And would you just mention some of the artists, like, through those two and a half decades that, you know, will be featured?
Sure. I mean, of course, we're going to start off with Mr. Andy Warhol because he was arguably, if nothing else, one of the biggest. And then there's Mr. Rauschenberg,
uh-huh.
who was around the same time as Andy Warhol, but he actually, you know, and he actually started a little before him.
Yeah.
David Hockney, also Jasper Johns, we'll be talking about, and going in from the 70s into the 80s, we'll be talking about Basquiat and, of course, Keith Haring.
Kind of describe a little bit that marriage between the hip hop and the art.
Yes, absolutely. So Basquiat and Keith Haring both were, they were graffiti artists. Now, not your particular, not your typical graffiti, not the burner pieces and stuff like that, but they were for the essence of graffiti because they were street artists and they were doing it without permits. And now the marriage, of course, is the fact that hip hop has four elements. For those that don't understand hip hop is not just music, it's a culture. And one of the elements is its art. It's the clothing, it's the music, it's the dance, and it's the art. And the art is graffiti. And Keith Haring and, Basquiat, being those types of artists, were immersed in that scene. And we are actually, you're going to use a particular song, which is Rapture by Blondie, because Blondie came from a different scene that was a part of the pop art era, which was the New Wave movement. And she saw the marriage. She saw how the two could be married together and introduce both cultures to each other. So it was like a, I guess you would say, a culture clash that worked, like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah.
And chocolate into peanut butter into chocolate.
Oh, yum.
And, yeah, so, and yeah, and Keith Haring, of course, you can honestly say, was probably about as big as Andy Warhol for his time period.
So,
and I just feel that that's very important because it did open the eyes to more people. I'm always a firm believer that the arts is the way to connect communities and bring worlds together.
Oh, heck yeah. And we need it now more than ever. Okay, so tell us again where it is and how easy is it to get to from the ferry if you don't live in Staten Island?
Oh, okay. That I can actually tell you very easily. All right, so once again, it is at the annex of the Reformed Church at 54 Port Richmond Road. And that is accessible. The best way to go if you're not from Staten Island and you are not, if you don't have a vehicle, you take the trains over to the Staten Island Ferry. And then from there, you catch the ferry and you take the the S-54, the Staten Island 54 bus, and you take that to Port Richmond Road. And it leaves you off right there, and then it's a block away.
Okay. All right. So Saturday night, 6 o'clock. And give the website out one more time.
Absolutely. LabyrinthArtsCollective.org.
So this is for the Retro Art Show. It sounds like, I'm glad I'm part of it, but I'm also would love to just see it anyway because it's music and art combined. So this is going to be a good night.
Yes, it is. Yes, indeed. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to performing with you.
Thank you. Same here. I will see you later. Thanks, Marvin.
My pleasure. You have a great day.
You too. My next guest is Brian Nurnberger. He is president and founder of Simply Smiles. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hi. How are you? I'm well. Thank you.
Good. Simply Smiles works in what? Do you work in the U.S. and you work in Central America?
Yeah, that's correct. We began working back in 2003 in Oaxaca, Mexico, where we still have extensive programs. And then about 8 years ago, we began working domestically as well on the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Reservation in South Dakota.
And you've got a pretty important fundraiser coming up with Peter Yarrow. And is it Frank Wayne?
Frank Wayne, who's an amazing artist. Yeah, this Sunday, Sunday the 13th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the Quick Center, which is on the Fairfield University campus, the beautiful theater there. We're having a benefit for the work that Simply Smiles does with the Lakota people living on the Cheyenne River Reservation. And we've been very, very fortunate enough to have wonderful artists who are going to be performing. Of course, my wife, Kristen Graves, is going to be singing, and then followed by Frank Wan. And Frank is a young man who is from the reservation in South Dakota, and he is a Lakota hip-hop artist. And I don't want to overstate, but when I first heard him perform, my first thought was, this must have been what it was like to see, Bob Dylan in the early 60s.
Wow.
He's an incredible activist, and his words and how he captures the audience, he's an amazing talent. And then finally, we're so fortunate to be able to call Peter Yarrow, of course, from Peter, Paul, and Mary, our friend and supporter. And so Peter is going to be headlining the show on Sunday. So we're excited to be able to do this and to talk about it. And there are still tickets available. So if you're listening out there, we'd love for you to join us.
Great. And people can get tickets by going to simplysmiles.org?
That's correct. Yeah, you can get tickets by going to simplysmiles.org. It's not too late to do so. You would just choose to pick them up at will call at the Quick Center, or there'll be plenty of tickets left because it's a good-sized theater. So you can show up on Sunday. It's a 4 o'clock concert at the Quick Center in Fairfield, and you can get tickets there at the door. And all the proceeds are going to go to support the work that we're doing on the Cheyenne River Reservation in South Dakota. And we're going to talk a great deal about that. The artists are, and I'm going to MC and speak to that some as well on Sunday. So it's both educational and a way to be proactive out there and help what's happening on the reservation system in general, but even to help the protests that are happening in North Dakota for the DAPL pipeline.
How will you be helping that?
Yeah, we're going to be spreading the word, but also the individuals from Cheyenne River Reservation that we work with that are up there fighting the fight and trying to stop the pipeline from coming through are individuals that we've partnered with, that we've built houses for, that we have helped to become leaders. And so we believe in a holistic response to need and to poverty. And so when you partner with communities and help provide exactly what the people living there need, then people become empowered to be change agents. And so we're going to introduce you to some individuals that Simply Smiles works very closely with who now are becoming leaders of the protest in North Dakota. So it's going to be an incredibly, incredibly powerful evening this Sunday.
That's excellent. I just got back myself and actually was helping out in Winona's kitchen, and she's from Cheyenne River, and just made some really good friends with Karen and, well, actually another, my little brother now with the Havasupai tribe. And wow, it's so heart expanding to be there and to be with the Native people, because in general they have such beautiful hearts. It's just wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've been incredibly inspired by what's happening with the water protectors. It's been incredible to see, and to be able to support them and stand side by side with them is a true honor. And you know, that's what Sunday is all about, is giving that confidence and giving those means to those individuals to make a difference and to be able to self-determine their future and to break a 200-year-long cycle of oppression and the results of that.
That's great. Do you guys incorporate any renewables in your building?
We do to some degree. We build houses. It took us 5 years to figure out how to build houses. And houses, while they're arguably the greatest tangible need when you look at a situation, an economic situation like we have on the reservation, it's one of the things that we do. Build houses is one part of a larger puzzle. But we took 5 years to figure out how to build a house that's appropriate for that economic climate and that physical climate.
Yeah,
physical climate where in the winter it gets to be negative 50 degrees, and in the summer it gets to be 110 degrees, and where you can't get the propane truck to come out and fill your tank. And even if you could, who can afford, you know, $600 to fill your propane tank?
Yeah.
And so we spent 5 years working with the people of the reservation to design a house that's appropriate for that world. And we did. And we focused on efficiency. So we build a house now that is insulated R55, which is about three times as insulated as a regular house. And then we heat it with wood pellets. And so now you can heat that house for the entire winter for about $300.
That's brilliant.
$300.
That is brilliant. Good for you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful solution. It works really, really well. And there's something about walking into one of these homes in the middle of the winter in South Dakota, and that wood pellet stove is firing, and everyone's gathered around it. It's an amazing, amazing thing to see. So we're really happy with the result, and it's providing a little foundation for people to springboard to something better, to something different.
That is excellent. So tell us the where and when about your concert. And I just have to add my two cents. Christian is an excellent performer, wonderful singer, songwriter. She has such heart and soul. Peter Yarrow is wonderful. And I think I have heard Frank once on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken, where he combined some traditional music with rap. Does he do that? I'm wondering if it's the same person.
He's amazing, fired by all of them.
So tell us one last time where, when, and how.
Absolutely. So please join us this Sunday evening, the 13th, this coming Sunday, at 4 o'clock p.m. at the Quick Center, which is the theater on Fairfield University's campus in Fairfield, Connecticut. So the show starts at 4 o'clock with Kristen Graves, Frank Wan, and Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary. All proceeds will benefit the work that Simply Smiles is doing on the Cheyenne River Reservation in South Dakota and to support the water protectors in North Dakota. And you can get tickets at simplysmiles.org, or you can just come to the theater on Sunday afternoon for the 4 o'clock show, and you can get tickets right there at the door.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you for the wonderful work you're doing, and I wish you continued success. That's this week's show, and be well, everybody. I will see you next week, and big, 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 big thanks to Max Schmid, who helped get this together with me. Really appreciate you, Max. Big, big thanks to Sean Rhodes. Hey, Sean, how you doing? And we'll see you next week. Adios, amigos.
Met an old man on the subway. Yesterday said, now that I'm gray, no one cares what I have to say. Back in my prime, I fought hard for what's right. Kids these days are too afraid. Yes, I started a revolution with my own hands. Wasn't blinded by illusion. I took a stand. Yes, I started a revolution. Did not back down. It was time to demand. On my way home, I felt changed and a little crazy. When you realize life's a game, you're not the same. The world's a con if you're raised poor and want something more. Born in a certain place and have a certain face. Yes, I'm starting a revolution with my own hands. Won't be blinded by illusion. I'll take a stand. Yes, I'm starting a revolution.